Hey, ready to walk through this with me? We're taking a deep dive into gait entrainment today. You sent over some fascinating research on how, visual and auditory cues, can help people with movement disorders, and I'm ready to unpack it.
It's a fascinating field,
Yeah.
especially now that we're seeing, like real progress in using these techniques to help people with conditions like Parkinson's, MS, even cerebral palsy.
Okay, so gait entrainment, it sounds kind of technical, but it's basically about using external cues, like a beat or a visual pattern, to help synchronize someone's steps and improve their walking.
You've probably experienced a simple form of it yourself. Ever notice how you unconsciously sync your steps with the person you're walking next to? Or how your pace changes to match the music you're listening to?
All the time, yeah. So researchers are figuring out how to use this natural tendency in a more targeted way, basically.
Precisely. And one of the key distinctions they've made is between open loop and closed loop systems. Open loop is like setting a metronome and asking someone to walk to it. The cue is preset and doesn't change regardless of how they're actually moving.
Makes sense, but I can see how that might be tricky, especially for someone with a movement disorder. It's like trying to fit into a box that doesn't quite
Fit.
fit. And that's where the research gets really interesting. You included a study about Parkinson's patients using open loop systems, and it actually highlighted some potential downsides like dizziness, balance issues, even something called freezing of gait. Freezing of gait. That sounds not good.
Not at all. It's like your feet suddenly feel stuck to the ground.
Oh, wow.
Not a
Anyway.
pleasant experience, which is why researchers are so excited about closed loop systems.
So closed loop is more adaptable, like a dance partner who can adjust their steps to match yours.
I like that analogy. Closed loop systems analyze the person's movements in real time and adjust the cues accordingly, creating a more dynamic and responsive feedback loop.
Okay, that makes sense. And is that why the research on closed loop systems seems so promising, at least from what I've read?
It's certainly a contributing factor. You actually included a study on a wearable VR system that projects a virtual tile floor, and the tiles change in response to the user's movements, creating that closed loop feedback.
Hold on. VR while walking, that sounds like a recipe for walking into a wall.
Right, but they've thought of that. It's not immersive VR in the traditional sense. The headset is transparent, so the user can still see their surroundings. It's more like an overlay on the real world, guiding their steps.
Okay, that's pretty cool. And what have they found with this system?
Well, they tested it on both Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis patients, and both groups showed improvements in walking speed and stride length, which are key indicators of gait function.
So they were actually walking better, more fluidly, just by using this VR system.
That's what the research suggests. And it's important to note that they saw these improvements in people who already had, significant walking difficulties.
That's remarkable. But it's not just visual cues that are showing promise, right? There was some interesting research on auditory feedback, too.
Absolutely. You included a study where they used a simple ticking sound synced to the patient's footsteps. It was like a personalized metronome.
Okay, I can picture that. Every step triggers a pick. Simple but effective.
It seems so. The researchers found that multiple sclerosis patients using this device showed improvements in walking speed and stride length, just like with the visual cues.
Wow, this is really making me think about how powerful even subtle cues can be. But what's actually going on in the brain with all of this?
That is the million-dollar question. And while we don't have all the answers yet, research is offering some compelling clues, especially when it comes to closed-loop
Do you
systems.
tell? I live for this stuff.
It seems to come down to dopamine, the neurotransmitter associated with reward and motivation.
Dopamine, the feel-good chemical.
Exactly. And here's where it gets really fascinating. Some researchers believe that the active engagement and constant adjustment required by closed-loop systems might actually tap into the brain's dopamine reward pathways, specifically those related to novelty and vigilance.
Wait, so because your brain is constantly challenged and stimulated by the changing cues, it's like it gets a little hit of dopamine, and that reinforces the positive effects on movement.
That's the idea. It's like your brain is thinking, this is new and interesting. I need to pay attention. And that engagement triggers the release of dopamine, potentially contributing to those improvements in gait.
It's like we're hacking the brain to improve movement. I love it.
In a way, we are. It highlights just how powerful that mind-body connection really is.
This is already blowing my mind, and we haven't even touched on the other conditions this could potentially help.
And this is just the beginning. We've mainly focused on Parkinson's and MS so far, but you sent some really intriguing research on cerebral palsy as well.
Oh, that's right. I'm so curious to hear about the potential for gait entrainment with CP.
It's incredibly promising. Studies have found that both visual and auditory feedback can help improve walking speed and stride length in people with CP.
So we're seeing similar benefits across different conditions, which makes me wonder if there are some like underlying mechanisms at play that could be targeted more broadly.
You're hitting on a crucial point. It's not just about treating specific symptoms, but potentially tapping into the brain's ability to learn and adapt. It's neuroplasticity.
Neuroplasticity, that's like rewiring the brain, right?
Exactly. And if we can harness that power through targeted interventions like gait entrainment, it could have implications far beyond movement disorders.
Okay. Now we're talking. This is where my learner brain really starts buzzing. Are we talking about potential new treatments for stroke, traumatic brain injury, even Alzheimer's?
It's a bold vision, but the early research is intriguing. Think about it. If something as simple as a ticking sound or a virtual floor can make a difference, imagine the possibilities as we learn more about how the brain responds to these sensory cues.
This is incredible. But before we get too ahead of ourselves, let's talk about what's next for gait entrainment research. What are some of the big questions scientists are still trying to answer?
One key area is understanding long-term effects. We've seen promising results in short-term studies, but we need to know how effective these interventions are over time.
So, do the benefits last? Do people need ongoing tune-ups with these systems?
Those are the kinds of questions researchers are investigating. They're also looking at how to personalize these interventions even further.
Because what works for one person might not work for another, right?
Exactly. They're exploring how factors like age, fitness level, and the severity of the movement disorder might influence how someone responds to gait entrainment.
It makes sense that a one-size-fits-all approach probably wouldn't
cut it. And they're experimenting with even more sophisticated systems. Imagine a device that doesn't just respond to your movements, but also adapts to your environment, anticipating obstacles or changes in terrain.
Like a smart walking companion that helps you navigate the world more smoothly.
Precisely. And they're even combining visual and auditory cues to see if that enhances the effects.
That's fascinating. We've talked about them separately, but what happens when you merge those two approaches?
That's what researchers are excited to find out. It's like giving the brain two different sets of clues to work with, potentially amplifying the benefits. Imagine walking on that virtual floor while also hearing a rhythmic beat that guides your steps.
Wow, that does sound pretty powerful. It's like giving the brain a sensory workout to improve movement.
Exactly. And the more we learn about how these different sensory inputs interact, the better equipped we'll be to develop personalized and effective treatments.
This is really making me think about the future of rehabilitation in a whole new light. It's not just about physical therapy anymore. It's about understanding the brain and finding new ways to tap into its remarkable ability to heal and adapt.
Absolutely. And it's a field with so much potential for improving lives.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground on this deep dive into gait entrainment. And I have to say, I'm truly impressed by the progress being made. But before we wrap up, I'd love to hear your take on something.
I'm all ears.
You've obviously spent a lot of time with this research. What's the one takeaway you'd want to leave our listeners with? What's the big aha moment that you hope they walk away with?
For me, it's the sheer potential of this field. Like, if we can achieve these kinds of results with relatively simple interventions, imagine the possibilities as technology advances and our understanding of the brain deepens. We're truly on the cusp of a revolution in rehabilitation.
That's a powerful thought. And it makes me wonder, are there any specific areas of research you're particularly excited about? Any future of gait entrainment predictions you'd be willing to share?
Well, one area that's particularly intriguing is the intersection of gait entrainment with other therapies. For example, you included a study on Parkinson's patients who underwent deep brain stimulation.
Deep brain stimulation. That's where they implant electrodes in the brain, right?
Yeah,
exactly. And what they found is that deep brain stimulation actually seemed to enhance the effects of gait entrainment. It's like the two therapies work synergistically to amplify the benefits.
So it's not just about using one approach or the other, but finding ways to combine them for even greater impact.
Precisely. And I think that's where the real future of this field lies, in developing personalized treatment plans that integrate multiple approaches, tailoring them to the individual's specific needs and challenges.
It's like we're moving from a one-size-fits-all model of treatment to something much more precise and individualized.
Exactly. And I believe that's where the greatest potential for improving lives lies.
Well, you've given our listeners a lot to think about today. Any final thoughts you'd like to leave them with? Perhaps something that encapsulates the essence of gait entrainment and its potential?
Okay, here's something to ponder. Every step we take, every movement we make, is orchestrated by an incredibly complex network of neurons firing in our brains. Gait entrainment offers us a glimpse into the power of harnessing that neural activity, using carefully timed cues to guide and refine our movements. It's a powerful reminder that even when faced with neurological challenges, the brain retains an incredible capacity for learning and adaptation.
That's a beautifully put and inspiring message. It's a testament to the resilience of the human spirit and the boundless potential of scientific discovery. Thanks for joining us on this incredible deep dive into the world of gait entrainment. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep those brain-body connections strong.